Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Tuesday's WWE SmackDown Live. Hey, before we get into SmackDown, just a heads up that I am the guest on Jim Ross's podcast, the Ross Report podcast at podcast1.com. So when you're done listening to this show, check it out. I'll give you a reminder at the end of the show as well. WWE SmackDown Live was in Little Rock, Arkansas at Verizon Arena on Tuesday, and this was a decent show. I can't say there was too many things that were like offensively bad or anything like that. There were some down moments, but I thought that, you know, for a show that featured kind of a typical television tag team main event, it was pretty good. I thought there were the show had more positives than negatives, I guess, is the best thing I can say about it. I will be using Jake Barnett's report on the show as my outline, so if you want to check that out on the main page of ProWrestling.net, go for it. You'll also be able to find, coming up on Wednesday, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm recording this on Tuesday night, but on Wednesday you will find my WWE SmackDown hit list, the SmackDown viewership number should be in, and a whole bunch more at ProWrestling.net. Tom Phillips, JBL, and Byron Saxton were on commentary, and things opened up with Jinder Mahal. They announced right off the bat that it was going to be Jinder Mahal and Rusev facing Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton in the main event, and that's when we ended up getting Jinder and the Singh brothers. Jinder was talking about being disrespected wherever he goes, and then he also complained about the disrespect shown to the Singh brothers by Shinsuke Nakamura last week. They ended up grabbing the mic and groveling. They were pleading with Mahal, apologizing to him, saying that they would never allow Nakamura to touch him again, and on behalf of the great nation of India, they wanted to kiss his royal feet, and they got down on their knees. And for some reason, even though they volunteered to do this, they looked like guys who were being forced to do it. It was kind of weird, like if you've seen a Kiss My Foot match or something. They kind of were slowing down and hesitant to do it, is the way it came off. But they were bailed out. This was interrupted when Shinsuke Nakamura came out. He ended up just kind of splitting the Singh brothers apart from one another to get to Jinder Mahal. He was getting the better of him. He was outnumbered, but Randy Orton's music played. He was going to come out for the save, but Rusev came out and attacked Orton, and so the babyfaces were roughed up to set up the main event of the show. I thought it was good build for the main event. I also liked what they did with Jinder and the Singhs. I think, okay, one of the Singh brothers was like doing this really over-the-top bit where I think he was supposed to be crying was the idea, and he didn't really get there, but I like the idea of just giving them more personality, giving their characters something where they're more involved with the Jinder act. And I'm not talking about, you know, more cheap finishes with the Singh brothers. I'm talking about just when it's come time for promos and things, you get them involved. I think they've shown that they can, they're decent talkers, and I think that's an area of weakness right now for Jinder. And some of it is due to the fact that WWE creative seems to give him the same promo almost week after week. But I think if you incorporate them, one of the ideas I've mentioned is just giving them distinct personalities. You actually know them by name. You know who these guys are. They're not just the Singh brothers. And I know they have names. I can't remember them off the top of my head even, because it doesn't matter. They're just the Singh brothers. And there's really, we just know they're with Jinder. They look up to him, but we don't know why. I've even said you could make one of them cockier than the other. Kind of trying to get the other brother in trouble or something, trying to suck up to Jinder. I think there's just different ways you can go about it where it's not, you don't want them stealing the spotlight from Jinder, but you want them enhancing his act. And I think there's a couple of different, you know, a few different approaches they could take to make that happen. But I did like this segment. Heading into the commercial break, the broadcast team told us that Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin would debut as a team coming up after the break. And then also we would get the AJ Styles U.S. Open Challenge. And then coming out of the commercial, they announced Nakamura against Randy Orton for next week. The winner will become number one contender to the WWE Championship. This makes sense. I mean, if you look at it, like, yeah, Orton had a bunch of chances, and granted, the Singh brothers always got involved, and Nakamura had one chance, and, well, the Singh brothers got involved, but Orton did get the non-title victory over Jinder. So normally I just say, well, you know, both guys, I guess, should probably get automatic rematches because of the outside interference. But when it comes to this win, it's like Nakamura certainly should get one coming out of SummerSlam, and then Orton, of course, again with that non-title victory that he had on SmackDown over over Jinder, I think it makes sense that he's in this mix too. So, and that's a match I'm looking forward to. I really want to see what they do together in the ring. I think it's there's potential there. It's an intriguing matchup. The opener was Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin defeating the Ascension in 8:33. I like the match. I like Gable and Benjamin together. Yeah, I mean, it's very much American Alpha all over again. There wasn't much in the way. Like, last week, they showed Benjamin looking a bit apprehensive. Like, Gable was super excited about teaming with him, and Shelton respected him and said he followed his career, but did look a little bit thrown off by the over-enthusiasm of Chad Gable. No sign of that. They just seemed like they were on the same page here. We'll have to see if they do, if they play around with that more when they do promos, similar to the way Alpha ended up getting together when Jason Jordan was first teaming with Chad Gable. The Ascension, it's kind of tough to take the guys seriously. I mean, they lost a lot of matches for one, and the other part of this is that they've just been these comedic heel goofballs in those Breezango skits, which I think has made things worse. At the same time, I think Victor is really good when it comes to making his opponents look good. I think he's the in-ring talent of the team. And I thought Benjamin and Gable had a good first outing. Well, it wasn't silky smooth, but the crowd was into it. Benjamin, 42 years old, and doesn't look it. I mean, just a very impressive athlete. So I look forward to seeing more from these two. And I think eventually we'll get them into that tag title mix with the Usos. Then backstage, we had Renee Young interview Baron Corbin. She asked him about squandering his Money in the Bank contract opportunity. And, of course, he said he didn't squander it. He said John Cena distracted him during his best opportunity and then ran off to Raw before he could right a wrong. And he said he would move on. He said last week AJ Styles offered an opportunity for the Open Challenge, and so he would cash in on that. And they went to a commercial break. And then, of course, it was time for that Open Challenge. However, it was not Baron Corbin. I was happy. I'm like, well, why would you give that away going into the break? I mean, half the fun of the Open Challenge is the champion comes out there, and then it's kind of a mystery as to whose music is going to play and who's going to come out. And so it didn't really make much sense. Well, that's not what they did. They ended up having AJ come out, and he talked briefly, and then it was time for the Open Challenger. It was not Corbin. It was Ty Dillinger who came out. Corbin followed. He wasn't happy about this, and they pushed and shoved on the floor, and Dillinger got in the ring and told the ref to ring the bell so that they could start the match, and that he did. And it was quick. It was AJ Styles beating Ty Dillinger in 1:54. Baron Corbin did stick around at ringside, but he didn't play a part in the finish. And I was kind of settling in going, well, it's probably going to end with Corbin interference, which it didn't. But I was looking forward to a match between Styles and Dillinger. Dillinger's a good worker, and it would have been fun to see what those could do if they were given any, real length of time. But it was just a minute and 54 seconds Jake had it at, and it was a cap crusher tap out victory. So I thought Dillinger, I like that he kind of asserted himself when he was going back and forth with Baron Corbin before the match, and ended up being the one to get the match. But then whatever good was done there was just kind of erased when he ended up losing this match so quickly and decisively. And then after the match, Corbin tossed Dillinger into the barricade. He tried to go after AJ Styles, but that didn't work. And then he showed some frustration. They went backstage where Jinder Mahal approached Rusev and tried to be buddy-buddy with him. What a great night it is for their countries, that sort of a thing. And Rusev said it's not about that. They're not friends. And after they win, he's coming for the WWE Championship. So so much for that Jinder Mahal and Rusev reunion as far as their alliance goes, which is fine by me. I don't need, I really don't, I don't think it's necessary to put those two together. But boy, Rusev just, I guess we'll talk more about it a little bit later. I was going to say, in kind of a rough place. And speaking of which, Mike Kanellis was in the ring with Maria. They didn't even get a televised entrance, man. I don't get this. Bobby Roode came out, made his full entrance. That was televised, and it was Bobby Roode defeating Mike Kanellis in 3 minutes. Wow. Just glorious DDT. I mean, once I saw it was Roode, it was like, well, there's really no question as to who's going to go over. But it did kind of cement what we've been seeing with Mike Kanellis. I was hopeful that, All right, they debuted kind of close to SummerSlam. Maybe, you get through that and you kind of give them a bit of a reboot coming out of that. He and Maria. No, it's just a decisive win for Rude, who was the babyface here, I guess, was the other. I guess that was the most surprising part of it. Because after last week, yeah, he worked against a heel, but still was like, well, are they doing this because they know Brooklyn's going to go nuts for Glorious, the song, and Rude in general? And then you kind of flip him the following week, and he just works against a babyface opponent then. No, right now he is a babyface. That much seemed clear. Doesn't mean he has to be long term, but for now he is. And it's odd because I'm so used to seeing Bobby Roode work as a heel for so many years in TNA. And as I've said, he had that one run that stands out. I mean, he had the beer money run, and that was, they worked as babyfaces at times. But the singles run, he was just more of a. Just you respected him and his ability, or just his hard work, and it was kind of the he showed good work ethic, and he was just kind of a down home guy, and it worked for him. But that's not what the Glorious character is. So we'll see how it goes. So far, so good for Rude, not so much for Mike and Maria, and it's a shame because I just was blown away by how good of a talker Maria was during her time in TNA, and Mike Kanellis wasn't bad in that area either. He was a pretty good talker himself. And I thought that, he maybe he's not world class as far as the in-ring ability goes compared to AJ Styles and some of the other truly elite guys, but he's not bad either. And so I don't under I'm not quite sure why Mike and Maria are just kind of being treated as complete undercard talents at this point. Hopefully there's a plan for this, but if there is, I'm not seeing signs of it. Kevin Owens was shown heading to the ring. Well, he was actually walking backstage, and I think it was Byron, one of the broadcast team members. They show him walking, and looks like he's coming to the ring. Why? Just because he's walking backstage? I mean, I guess they'd know what part of the backstage, what that looks like, but it just seemed pretty random. But that's what he was doing. But Aiden English was actually singing. He was interrupted by Owens, who told him that the Arkansas Hayseeds can't possibly appreciate his talent, so he should vacate the ring. And he told him he would only ask once, and well, he left. And Owens said last week he was supposed to choose his referee. The person he didn't pick was Shane McMahon. And then they showed the footage of Shane taking the, well, Corbin leaving and Shane becoming the referee. Owens talked about winning the WWE Universal Championship 365 days ago, and he talked about being screwed out of his U.S. championship, and he said that would never happen on Raw because the lovely Stephanie McMahon would never abuse her power. Get a kick out of that. Then we also he complained about SmackDown being the so-called land of opportunity, and when it's actually Shane McMahon's personal playground. Well, out came Shane McMahon, who said that his personal referee bailed on the match, and he had no choice but to step in, which isn't really true. I mean, Corbin. I mean, if you go back to last week, I thought the idea was that Kevin Owens' fingers grazed the ropes, and I don't know, does that lead to a rope break? I don't know. It didn't seem like the most heelish rope break ever. But Shane McMahon came out anyway, got into an argument with Corbin, who then just said hell with it and left. So not exactly the most truthful thing for the babyface to say, but no big deal. Shane said he counted a proper three count. Owens lost fair and square to AJ Styles, and he said everyone was tired of Owens complaining, and he told him to get out of the ring so that Aiden English could get back in because his match with Sami Zayn was coming up. And sure enough, that's what they went to. It was Aiden English beating Sami Zayn in 3:19, and that's because Kevin Owens, for just out of the blue, decided he didn't like the work that the referee was doing. He was on commentary at this point, and decided he was going to do that job himself. So he took the shirt off of the referee and put it on himself, and then just ended up performing a pop-up powerbomb on Zayn. And then, even though Zayn was telling this like he was completely out cold, as Aiden English covered him, Kevin Owens still delivered a fast count. I got a kick out of that. This is good stuff. I mean, I like what they're doing with Owens and Shane, in large part because it's giving Kevin Owens so much mic time. I mean, Shane, when he wrestles, it's a special event, and it looks like that's what they're building up to right now. But in the meantime, not that you're not going to see Kevin Owens wrestle, but you are going to hear a lot from him. And I've said, since they kind of started teasing this, that this is something that Kevin Owens can sink his teeth into. He's such a good heel, and he's such a good talker that I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And so far, that's been the case. Then the next match, was coming after a commercial break was for the right to choose the stipulation in New Day's tag team title rematch. Yes, it was another Usos and New Day match on television. I don't get that decision. Before we get to the match, the last time they did this, I said, boy, you know, this is one I assume we're going to see a lot of the Usos and New Day. And, you know, I mean, I guess, yeah, we're, as I mentioned earlier, Benjamin and Gable are kind of in that mix, but it's going, you know, I think it's going to take a little bit of time. Point is, I think you will ultimately see a long program between the Usos and New Day, and you do, because there's just not that many tag teams to work with on the SmackDown brand, and those are the two best. And so you don't want to overexpose their feud, especially if you know it's going to be long on television. Plus, you throw in the fact that these guys just, you know, tore the house down on the kickoff show. They had a great kickoff show match. That's the match I would want in people's minds. You know, when you start hyping the next time that these teams meet, to maybe show some highlights from that match, just to kind of remind people, or for people who didn't see the show, let them know just how good that was. And instead, yeah, you got just, you know, a decent match, a five-minute match between these teams. It was the Usos beating New Day. As far as Xavier Woods is concerned, he was there. He was able to walk out. He did have a big black brace on his knee. If you missed it, on Monday night, the referee had to throw up the X sign during a three-way triple threat with the Usos, New Day, and Breezango, because Woods suffered an apparent knee injury. I assume it is, based on the fact that he had the brace on the knee. But Woods ended up being helped to the back. We had a good report on that from our correspondent, and his name escapes me, but if he's listening, thank you very much for sending that in. I do appreciate it. The good news is that, again, he's walking. You know, he was moving a little gingerly, and he also had a sign on that I got a big kick out of, saying simply, "It's sore." He had this handmade sign around his neck that just said that, and they left it at that. So it was the other two actually working the match, though, Kofi Kingston and Big E. And what happened was Big E was sent to the floor, and Kofi was fooled by a blind tag. He was in position for a roll-up, but Jimmy entered the ring and rolled him up instead and held on to the tights to get the win. So the Usos will pick the stipulation for the rematch, which, if you know, common sense would tell you, it would be a handicap match as soon as humanly possible against Woods with the other two members banned from ringside. But I'll bet it's not. Backstage, James Ellsworth introduced Carmella, and he asked her what her plan was for the briefcase. And she told him that she wasn't saying anything after he ruined her plans last week. Natalya approached and said that she was lucky Ellsworth stooged her off, because she would have made her the female Baron Corbin. And Carmella replied they had a match next week, so she should keep her title warm for her. Then Naomi walked up and informed Natalya that in 2 weeks, she would have her title match on Raw. And then Natalya didn't look very pleased with the thought of defending the title against both women over the next couple of weeks. I must have missed something when it came to Ellsworth stooging off a Carmella cash-in. I must be at least forgetting something. Lana was in the ring, and she introduced the ravishing Reign of Terror, saying it would start tonight, and then she introduced Tamina as the most dominant and feared WWE female superstar and a future SmackDown Women's Champion. And then Tamina beat, I believe it was just an unnamed enhancement wrestler. I don't think they ever said the woman's name, but it was just a squash match. Jay clocked it at 52 seconds, so less than a minute. She won with a super kick. The only thing of note is that Lana had the mic, the house mic, and told her to crush. I don't get why Lana isn't doing this with Rusev. I mean, they're trying to get Tamina over that part. I mean, I understand it. It just, is it worth it? It just, you know, Rusev, his character is in kind of a rough spot right now. That's an act that really clicked. And now you add Lana to the Tamina act, and I'm just not really seeing much here. I don't really get where this is going. I mean, and I know they're trying to build up Tamina, but is it worth it when you compare it to, well, you know, they could be building up Rusev to be more of a meaningful player on the men's side rather than in the women's division. And, you know, I'll take Rusev with Lana over Lana with Tamina. After the match, we had Tamina and Lana celebrate, and then the announced team set up season 2 of the Fashion Files, and this is called Back to Basics. There were some, you know, cute moments in the video that they have for this. It's like their, old school TV opening, when they used to be kind of longer and that sort of a thing. And there's so much about this that's a throwback. I don't know. They found the they turned the lights off and a black light was there, and so they were able to read that whole to be thing from the last time. It also had or not to be, and that pointed them towards Shakespeare and ultimately Aiden English. And Fandango was wearing a pair of sunglasses. He put another pair on, and then he put another pair, like in the V of his shirt. And even, Tyler Breeze was looking at him awkwardly over that one, and that was it. Can't say I really laughed. I always do look forward to seeing art. What are they going to try? I don't find them to be as humorous as a lot of other people do. Most of these segments, there have been some exceptions, but it's kind of like we waited a couple weeks for that. But we'll see what comes up next, because you just never know. I mean, there are those weeks where, as someone who finds less humor in it than most people seem to, I gotta say, that it's something that I find myself looking forward to, and when it actually clicks, you get a good laugh out of it, and it makes it feel worthwhile. Live crowd didn't seem all that inspired by this either. I don't know, maybe they weren't. Usually you can hear the live crowd when these segments before they play and then after, and it was pretty quiet for this one. It was main event time. Jinder Mahal and Rusev were already in the ring, and we got the very final seconds of Nakamura's entrance, just because I think they'd already shown it once, I guess. And then Randy Orton received a full entrance for the main event, and they brawled at ringside as Randy was making that entrance, and they went to a commercial. And then in the main event, it was Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton defeating Jinder Mahal and Rusev in 13:48. They gave Nakamura the win, and he got it over Rusev, rather than Jinder Mahal. In fact, it was Orton who stopped Jinder from interfering, and then ended up performing a hanging DDT on him, and then Nakamura finished off Rusev with a flying knee from the second rope and his Kinshasa finisher for the win at that point. And then after the match, Orton kind of spoke briefly with Nakamura, off mic, and looked like, hey, it's a happy ending for the baby faces, until Randy Orton hit an RKO on Nakamura, and Nakamura sold that as the to end the show. And JBL, the other broadcast team members were wondering why Orton did that, and JBL said because he's the Viper. Why else? Or something like that. And hey, I like this. There are times where it's like there were times back in the day even when like Steve Austin would give a stunner to Stacy Keibler. We're like, what? But this wasn't one of them, because they do have the match coming up next week, and so that adds a little juice to it. It's not just two baby faces that are going to go out there and have this respectful match, which can be fine at times, but I guess I like a little more pizzazz than that way more often than not. And so now there's some tension between these guys. It's now, Nakamura took an RKO, and he'll be out for some level of some measure of revenge next week against Orton. And that's a big TV main event. I like that. Again, fresh matchup, and just to see how those two are going to mesh in the ring, I think it's going to be fun. And I think the RKO enhanced that. And of course, the winner of that is going to get a title shot against Jinder. Now, I don't think they said when. I think there's no SmackDown pay-per-view in September, and so they have some time. So it's possible that we get it. I guess one thing to keep in mind is if they're going to do this soon on television, well, they could surprise us and have Randy get the win, and have yet another match with Jinder on television, with the idea of saving Nakamura and Mahal for the next SmackDown pay-per-view in October. Just something to keep in mind. I mean, if this is to set up the pay-per-view, then my guess is that Nakamura is the next challenger at the pay-per-view, but we'll see. Hey, if you guys enjoy these full-length audio reviews of the television shows and you're listening on the free side of things, know that the members get these after all the television shows. Raw, SmackDown, Ring of Honor Television, NXT Television, Lucha Underground. The list goes on. Global Force Wrestling. So I think those are the major shows that we cover in audio form. And of course, all the major pay-per-view events as well. So if you're interested in membership, you want to hear those on a weekly basis, all of those shows, all those audio reviews, in addition to all of the other audio content that we do, including the .NET Weekly audio show, which I'll be recording by the time, well, it may be up by the time some of you guys hear this, but on Wednesday morning with Will Pruitt. That is where we run through all the news of the week, sometimes include some items that haven't been reported elsewhere, and that is our flagship show. The Q&A show that went up on Tuesday this week, just because of the Mae Young Classic, that's where I answered the member questions, both pro wrestling and then some non-wrestling fun at the end. If audio is your thing, again, we have a ton of it available, and all you have to do is visit the main page of ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area, and once you're there, you will find three different pricing options. Click on the one that works best for you, and you will become a .NET member in a matter of moments. It's a very simple sign-up process. We'd love to have you sample what we do on the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, both the website and the member site. And hey, take a moment, please subscribe to our daily podcast, and we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a rating. So if you're on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you can leave a rating, if you could take a moment to do that, it would help us out a lot, and I would appreciate it. And if you still don't have your fill of audio, visit Podcast One, The Ross Report. I am a guest on the Jim Ross podcast this week. Always cool to catch up with Jim Ross. I always appreciate when he has me on the show. And we talked about a wide variety of topics. And I asked him a little bit about the Mae Young Classic. So be sure to check that out. Thank you so much again for listening, everybody. I will talk to you soon. Take care.